Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1143. Let's go to the corkboard events at ID10T.com. Like Jack, who writes, I just want to let you know I made a thing about 5 years ago, and it's still a thing. I host SciFlix, a free community film screening once a month through the academic year when we show a feature film, play a Kahoot trivia game for prizes, and have a panel discussion with professional scientists about topics inspired by the films. For anyone in the Kansas City area, we can be found at edwardscampus.ku.edu/SciFlix, SciFlix. Hope to see you at the next KU Edwards Campus SciFlix. Great idea, Jack. Thank you so much for sharing events at ID10T.com. For anyone else on the corkboard, this episode is David Dasmalchin, who, you know, it's so funny that, because before we did the podcast, I would say like, oh my God, yeah, I know Dave. We're friends. I know David. We've been at so many of the same events, so many of the same social gatherings. But I think we both realized when we were doing the podcast, like, wait a minute, I don't know if we've ever actually had like a lengthy conversation, but we've hung out dozens and dozens and dozens of times. He's just the sweetest guy, and I'm so excited for his success. Dave has done so many, he's been in so many fantastic things. He's just like the coolest, sweetest nerd who has just thrived in the nerdverse and done so many cool things, movies, television shows. Most recently, he was Polka Dot Man in Suicide Squad. He was in Dune that came out last year. He also has his own comic, Count Crowley, which you can get the paperback edition or you can get the Kindle or version on Comixology. And just a lovely, sweet, wonderful man who speaks very openly about addiction and mental health. He's an advocate for mental health and just the nicest guy. So I am so thankful that we actually got to sit down and have this wonderful in-depth conversation. It was such a pleasure. And I highly encourage you to follow just all the amazing things that he's done and see all of his credits and what he's got coming out. So thank you to David Dasmalchin for being a wonderful guest on the ID10T podcast number 1143, which starts right now.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Nice job on taking out the backlighting. That is some real 21st century. That is some real 2021, 21st century understanding of the meeting process.
I was all set up in my nerd lair, my office, and the people installing the book shelves in our bedroom didn't finish yesterday when they were supposed to, and I was about to start the meeting and the saws and everything just started going off. So here I am in our guest room.
Well, that's okay. I'm in my office. I normally do this from another part of the house, but my wife is down there right now with our giant dog, kind of like running him around the backyard, and he likes to swim, so he's swimming in the pool, and she's just kind of giving him exercise. So I'm in my office where the lighting is not great.
We will probably be interrupted by Bubblegum, by the way. She's in the guest room because since the guys are working upstairs, I wanted her to be in here so she wouldn't be scared. Let me see if there's any other better place with any kind of better background.
You look fine. Like we're not using video, so it doesn't.
Oh, okay. All right.
I just re-record video so that I can see, so we can see each other, but we don't use any of it.
Well, I appreciate you opening our meeting with a serenade, and I do adore that. And thanks for having me on, man. I'm really excited to talk to you about
it. Oh my God, no, please. When Yarbo was on a few weeks back and we just started gushing about you, and I was like, fuck, David should be on the podcast. You know, it's like so I immediately set it up, and I'm just sorry this did not happen sooner.
Well, the first of many, hopefully.
How have you been?
Really good, man. I'm really, really good. I am so happy that the world has caught Dune fever. It's really exciting right now at this moment to be a part of launching a film that is so spectacular and I think checks all the boxes of what we want out of like a big movie, but it also is really cerebral and has a lot of patience. And that can sometimes, you know, you wonder like how are audiences, you know, general people, audiences that go to the big movie theaters looking for, you know, some escapist excitement, how are they going to respond? And it's beautiful to see that. I just got home. I've been abroad shooting for most of the last 6 months. And yeah, things are really good. I'm feeling really great about life professionally and personally. And Eve, my wife, is we were able to spend like a week together, just the two of us. And that was really nice. So yeah, it's a lot. Life is very overwhelming right now, but in mostly all good ways. And that's, I can't ask for more than that, you know?
That's good, but please do not underestimate the stress that good things can also create. I think we get, you know, it's so easy for us to be like, I don't know why I'm so stressed. You know, I'm getting all these great things are happening. It's like, well, any dramatic changes in your life are going to create stress. And especially even when good things happen, even when things happen that you've always wanted, because, you know, you don't want to fuck it up, or you feel like, oh, you get superstitious about it. Or it's like, oh, you feel the pressure and the responsibility and you know, so it's like, I don't think we can underestimate the fact that that is a real stress, even when they're good things.
Absolutely.
And that we don't necessarily have to downplay it. It's like you're going through these incredible changes and evolutions. And I love your career. And I also love, just because, you know, you and Eve are just the sweetest. And so it just, I think, is like, I think so many of us are rooting for you as a person, rooting for you, like, that things are really connecting and clicking for you right now. And I'm just excited.
Thanks, man. Thank you. You know, my therapist, a while back, Eve and I were having this, like, these really stressful days leading up to any travel. Sometimes we love to travel for the love of travel, but also for work, there's a lot of travel built into that. And moving, as everybody knows, is one of the most stressful things you can go through. And just picking up and relocating and settling down, it for me is enough to induce pretty intense anxiety and stress. Then you couple that with, like you're saying, the pressure of, this is what I've always asked for. These are the things that I've always dreamt about. And now they're happening. And am I going to do a good job? Am I going to give, you know, these diehard fans what they're yearning for? Am I going to give the director who's taken a chance on me what they're looking for? Am I going to, you know, be my most authentic self, both when entertaining and when not entertaining, so that I feel like my life, you know, is fully fleshed out? And who am I, both personally, privately, publicly, all stuff that I'm sure you have thought about and have dealt with for a long time. As somebody who's very much in the public eye, I feel very similarly now, all of a sudden, being mostly a pretty unrecognizable character actor to getting to have some bigger roles and some bigger projects, most notably, you know, in James's film as Polka Dot Man is by far the biggest role I've ever had in a studio film. And so I got back from being gone for 5 months, and just going to the airport was different, or going to grab some drive-through with my kids has changed a little bit. And I it's a little overwhelming. And also, I recently lost my father in the last 2 weeks. And that was...
Oh, no, David, I'm so sorry.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's been a blessing. He was in a dark... he had dementia, and at the end of his life was really... It was not a quality of life. So his release is actually a blessing. I'm grateful that he's in a better place. But there's so much to unpack between children and their relationships with their parents. I don't care how good, how bad, how complex, how simple you may define any relationship when it's a parent and a child. And this one, trust me, was an Encyclopedia Britannica 24 edition set of the complexity of life. And so I am again, and thank you for what you said about Eve, but it's the truth. I've surrounded myself with people who have my back and who are there for me in the most genuine way. And that extends to the Yarvos and Autumns and the friendship circle, the AGs, the Jameses, the so many people that I feel very safe, like I've built these real meaningful relationships with. So when tragedy strikes, or loss, I wouldn't even call my dad's passing tragedy, to be honest, because him passing was in many ways a relief. Because when you've watched someone suffer and they're finally out of suffering, it actually feels really good. And then you get this complicated feeling of guilt as to like, why do I feel good that somebody who I love is dead, but you know that they have, you know, moved on. And I'm just sad he didn't get to see Dune, but he did. I don't know how much he processed because his brain was kind of gone, but he did go to a cinema with my stepmom and watched The Suicide Squad. So that's a beautiful thing. And I know he was really proud of me.
Well, I'm sure he was. And I don't think there's anything, I mean, you know, grief is a very complicated thing to process. And I don't think there's anything, you know, wrong. We know when my dad died, he just died suddenly of a heart attack. And so it was sort of like, whoa, that just came out of nowhere. It was totally a surprise. And I have said that I am grateful that he didn't, I mean, he wasn't old. He wasn't young, but he wasn't old. He was 72. And I just said, you know, I'm grateful that he didn't have some long drawn out thing that he had to suffer through. I'm not happy that he's gone. I'll never be happy that he's gone, but I'm grateful that he didn't have to, that his ending was not something that was really painful and drawn out. So I don't think that's to me, that reads as a loving thing of like, you love someone enough that you're saying like, I want to release them and let them go because I don't want them to suffer in the way that you would also not want to suffer, nor would you want people to feel, you know, like if you went through something like that, you understand that the people that love you, you would want them to not watch you suffer, you know? So it's understandable agreed. why it's so complicated, but it sounds like, you know, you're dealing with it in a healthy way. And also even just within the first 5 minutes saying, my therapist, like, oh yeah, Dave's good. He's got a support.
I love our therapist so much. I've been working with her for 7 years and I've been utilizing the power of therapy for almost 15 years now. You know, I've been clean and sober going on 20 years in May. I'll have 20 years of being clean and sober. And that process involved the development of a support system, because in 12 steps and in recovery, you know, you build a support network. And it was so crucial to the beginning of my journey of mental wellness. But I am what many people are who struggle with addiction, what is termed a dual diagnosis patient, which means not only do I battle addiction, I also struggle with mental illness. And my manic depression was in such a place that even when all of my life checklist was in order, I had a job, finally, I was paying my rent, I was sober, I was living things seemed in order, I was still fluctuating so painfully between extreme highs of anxiety and extreme lows of depression, and still wrestling with suicidal ideation. So about 15 years ago, I started working with therapy and psychotherapy, which led me to developing the necessary relationship that I have with psychiatry as well. And and my most recent therapist I got when I got to LA, and I've been working with her for a number of years now. And it's like, okay, life is so beautiful. Life is so amazing. Life is so filled with miracles and joy and art and celebration and cinema and comic books and friendships and parties and all these things we do so dearly love and cherish. It's also really hard. Life is just really hard. Even on its best days, we can be confronted with everything from the frustration of things not going our way to somebody hurting our feelings to being stuck in a rut where we're considering things. Like for me, I get really sorrowful sometimes when I think about how short life can be, or I think about mortality, or I think about the fact that anybody I love might be suffering. That's just life. It's really hard. And all of us, I always envision, are like knights going into the adventure, into the forest. You know, it's like we're going into the magical forest. There's going to be, you know, damsels in distress or dudes in distress, depending on who you care to, you know, have a love with, or non-binary people in distress. And there's also ogres, and there's heroes, and there's all these things we're going to encounter. And we need the best armory possible on our steed as we go through this journey. And for me, that is this beautiful combination of like my therapy work, psychiatry work, recovery work, my friends, my family, my art, my animals and pets that I love, the kindness of strangers. There's all these tools and amazing things that I have on my side that help me on this journey. And I think anybody listening, or all of us, we need those, whether we look at it that way or not. They're so crucial to not only our survival, but to our ability to be present and enjoy all the gifts that life has for us, you know?
Yeah. And you really just want to set the table as much as you can to succeed. And I don't mean like material success. I mean like personal success, you know?
Yes.
And you have that, like you said, you know, you have this amazing wife and you have kids, these kids that you love so much, and you have, you know, friends that you care about and all this other stuff. I mean, all the things that you must be going through right now that have the potential to fuck with your head a little bit about, you know, it's like this success spike and everything. I mean, it's all fine, you know, like, but it just, I think, not that you asked me, so please forgive me for being presumptuous and thinking you care about what I'm telling you, but I'm just telling you, as someone who cares about you, you just remember that your work is a thing you do and not who you are, you know, like it's a thing that you get to do, a thing that you love to do, but no matter how successful or how not successful, like whatever the material, whatever the external things are, they aren't you, and they shouldn't personally define you, you know? So I think that's just the important thing to remember, because, you know, particularly, you know, I just had 18 years of sobriety, and this is the first year that I forgot the date, which was October 8th. Like October 10th, I was like, oh, holy shit. Like, I totally forgot. I just forgot. And because it's been 18 years, and, you know, and I think sometimes everyone does this, but I think we in particular have brains that have a tendency to kind of place value in external things to make us feel certain ways. And that's dangerous because you can't control the external world and it's very fragile. And it's so how do you set the table so that you have that internal value system, so that you know that you're enough and you believe you're enough, regardless of, you know, whatever is happening in the world. And those are sort of the important things to remember. So, you know, I am encouraged and happy, because it sounds like you're fucking on it. Like you have set up all the things so that, you know, you have this beautiful safety net to take care of you, you know, when you need to.
Thanks, man. And thank you. And that's great advice. And also congratulations. I mean, 18 years, man, what an amazing achievement. And I just hope anybody who's listening knows Chris and I are here today by the grace of God and this miracle called sobriety. And if you feel like you're struggling, it's not about, you know, anything other than the willingness. And if you've got that willingness, there are absolutely free resources for you right now, probably within an hour of wherever you're sitting listening to this, that you could get to a meeting, you could get your first step going. And it's just taking that first step can lead to, I mean, look at the incredible life you've built for yourself, man. It's a beautiful thing to see. You're somebody that has taken all of your passions and turned them into a career, a lifestyle, a way of life, you know, and it's, and at the same time, you genuinely seem to be enjoying every step of the way, you know?
I do enjoy it. And you know, it is, you know, and it's sort of extending the message you were saying to anyone who's listening who might be struggling right now. It really, there's no shame in it. Like, it's just, you just pulled out a cute cat. This could only feel better with the addition of an adorable cat.
And yes. This is Bubblegum. She's been kind of a little bit of an internet celebrity in the last few months. Bubblegum, I rescued on the set of The Suicide Squad when we were in Panama, and she's been a part of our family ever since. She's trying to eat the microphone. Sorry, Bubblegum. Do you feel like saying hi? No, you can't ask cats to do anything.
No, they sort of just whatever they want.
She's so great and so loving, and she has been such a boon to our family. But yeah. And I know you love animals too. And
I do. I do. Just to wrap up my long-winded thing before my sobriety story, like, I always sort of knew, maybe this is something at some point that I might need to address, you know, like, and so, because I was just drinking a lot. And so, and I never like bottomed out or anything, you know, it wasn't like, I felt emotionally kind of stuck, like, oh, I'm in a rut and I seem to be doing this a lot and I don't know if that's good. And literally one day I was sitting in a therapist's office and she just said, "You look like shit. You should just quit drinking today. You should just fucking do it like right now." And it just made sense. I was like, oh my God. Like, I didn't, you know, like, I didn't have that thing where I was like, next week, you know, because it's hard to stick to that, you know? And I was just very lucky that I had the right person at the right time and I was just ready. And, you know, I do talk about it fairly regularly because I just think today might be the day that someone just needs to hear that, and they hear it and they go, oh my God, I could just do that, you know? And I'm not saying it's, you know, the easiest thing in the world, but you don't have to take it on all at once. You just got to get through that first day and that first step and that first, and there's no shame in it, and it's okay, and you can be okay. And that's why I love that you're talking about it. And I know there's going to be at least one person out there who's going to hear that, take out their AirPods or whatever and go, fuck, today is the day. I just need.
Yes. I love the thought of that. And you're right, man. Like, we've got to erase the stigma of shame that comes with those of us who do have the gene or whatever you choose to believe causes it of being an addict. There, we have to remove that stigma. We have to remove the stigma of those who struggle with mental unwellness and who need mental health. I think that I was nervous, to be honest, man. It wasn't until 2013. At that point, I was, you know, 11 years clean, and I was making a film called Animals that I wrote, which is about a couple who are struggling with heroin addiction, which was my drug of choice. And I had said to everybody involved, because it was a micro budget film, I said to all my friends helping me make it, like, I don't want anybody to know. This is my business. It's my anonymity. And by the way, if you're listening, your anonymity is sacrosanct. You do not have to do what Chris and I do. You don't have to go talk publicly about it. That works for us because that's part of our journey, but you can become a sober person, do it completely anonymously. But for me at that point, I said, I was afraid of professional repercussions because I said, even though I'm 11 years clean, who wants to hire a guy that they know could possibly slip, or a guy who has struggled with mental illness and heroin addiction? And thankfully, with the encouragement of my friends and Eve in particular, I was doing an interview and I started talking. As you could tell, I'm a gabber. I'll just talk. But I just was like, I'm gonna acknowledge my struggle, and haven't looked back since. It's been really freeing for me and empowering.
Well, you were ready, you know, you were ready. And again, I'm sure that was tremendously helpful to people, and, you know, and also just sort of seeing all the steps you've taken and the choices that you've made. And, you know, it's like even looking at, you wanted to create a comic book series. So you start writing Count Crowley. Like, it's looking at all the choices that you've made that are basically you saying to yourself, hey, I'm worth it. So I'm going to make these choices for things that I want to do, that I enjoy, and fight that urge that so many of us have to, you know, beat ourselves down or self-sabotage or, why would I ever, no one ever. It's like, you know, it's because you can do those things. You are allowed to do those things.
Yeah.
You don't have to. And it's not that, again, it's these are external things. It's not that they're going to fix you or whatever, but it is like the process of you saying like, hey, I'm worth enough to myself that I'm going to pursue joyful things. It's a very profound thing and a very kind of unspoken testament to, you know, your recovery and that you really believe in yourself as you should.
Thanks, man. Thanks. And I have been so inspired by people that I've either just admired from afar or had the privilege of collaborating with, where bringing myself to my work, bringing myself my personal past history, demons, my narrative into my work, without it being some form of art therapy, because that to me doesn't work. But it's not about like, oh, I'm going to work through my problems with my work. It's that I'm going to bring my whole self, you know, roughshod and all, into the workspace and craft stories inspired by the things that really matter to me, that perplex me. And you look at James, you know, what he does with all of his stories. There's so much of James Gunn splattered across the pages of every script that he writes. When I look at, you know, Denis and the things that I know haunt or, you know, cause him to sit up thinking about existence, you know, he brings into his work. So with Count Crowley, and thank you for mentioning it, it's one of my proudest accomplishments. I wanted to tell a story that tied together my love of monsters and my love of late night horror hosts and my feelings of struggling to battle my self-doubt and shame and addiction and alcoholism. And thank goodness, you know, by the way, if you're listening, I have pitched dozens of ideas to the world, be it as an actor or as a writer. And many of them didn't get the engine light, you know, and that's okay. It took all of those swings to finally connect with the ball in the way that it has for me with Count Crowley. And, you know, but I will always hopefully continue to be surrounded by the people who give me the courage to take that leap and bring myself into the work, you know?
Well, and, you know, listen, again, not that you asked me, but I'm just offering, and anytime you can go, Chris, shut up, I know all this. But because I imagine that you are in a zone where opportunities are flooding in. You're going to get to do a lot of opportunities to do things, and you're going to want to do all of them at first. Because also, you know, when you're an up and coming performer, the idea of saying no to anything is fucking mind blowing. It's like, wait a minute, no, I need to work. I got to work. And so, you know, again, another piece of unsolicited advice is it's okay to say no to things, particularly to preserve your own sense of well-being or just if you're not that passionate about something. Like, you never have to feel bad to say like, nope, I appreciate the opportunity, but I'm going to take some time for myself. I'm going to take some time and, you know, be with my family or whatever. It's like, you don't have to, you're going to get a ton of opportunities. And so it's just, unless you already are, and, you know, it's just about sort of preserving yourself so you don't get pulled into kind of an addictive with like work shit.
Agreed. It's why I have taken on representation just in the last 2 months for the first time in 5 years. For 5 years, no agent, no manager, because I got so tired of being handed continuously things that I was like, that's not the direction of the life that we're trying to build here. And I feel like I finally found, you know, a partnership that works for me and appreciates but you're right. And anybody listening to this, it's not just for those of us in entertainment. Chris's wisdom it's so true. Just, I understand the fear of, you know, in 2012, I had $0 in the bank. I was, you know, trying to make it to 5 commercial auditions a day in Santa Monica and not booking one of them. And I got offered this chance to be in a horror movie and make about $20,000. And I was like, oh my God. And then I read the script and I was like, I would not do this film justice because I don't understand a single word of it. And it's just not for me. And I talked to the director and I just was like, I just can't. I didn't say any of that. I just said, you know, I was like, I can't, I said, I'm really busy, but I'm honored and thrilled and good luck with your project. And that was that. And then about a week later, I was sitting there going, cause I would have flown out a day or two later. This was one of these, they were replacing someone at the last second. They just made me the offer. I would have been I would have been in Canada filming. And it was Monday and I was sitting in my little apartment in Koreatown going, I can't believe I just turned down money and an opportunity because I didn't think I could connect with the material. I was really beating myself up. And I got a call to go across town for a last minute audition for which I would not have been able to attend because I would have been in Canada making that horror movie. And I went and auditioned for Denis Villeneuve's Prisoners as a last second. They were trying to find a role and he ended up casting me in the film. I ended up building a lifelong artistic partnership with him that would never have happened if I'd have made that first decision based on my fear of unemployment or my fear of being broke or, you know, and so if you're sitting there and you're thinking about, well, this is, I should take this just because I should. Listen, try your best. Get to know that internal deep, deep, deep voice. That's what meditation has done a lot for me. I've been trying my best to be really diligent with yoga and meditation and trying to listen for the last few years to that truer voice, the voice that isn't motivated by ego, insecurity, et cetera. And it's people can scoff at us because now, you know, like, look, Chris, you're incredibly successful. I've started to build some success and they think, oh, it must just get easier the more successful you're. And you go, no, it actually gets more. Am I right?
Well, it just because, you know, it's like I've been lucky enough to have the same. I've been working with this trainer workout for like 15, 16 years. And he would always say like, and it basically was like, I was always in, like, I always had back problems my whole life. And I was all, like, I was getting to a place where I'm like, in my 30s, I was like, if I don't start kind of some kind of exercise regime, by the time I'm probably the age I am now, I will be a mess. Like, and so I started working out with this guy and he's amazing. And so it just, and he would always say like, look, just know that when you're asking the universe for more, it's more of everything. It's not more of one thing. It's more stress. It's more responsibility. It's more to lose. It's more, you know, pressure. It's more. And so it's very
That's
easy.
Such great advice. That it is. Such, it's so true.
You know, it's like, it's more of everything. So are you prepared for that? And, you know, because it's very easy to have these simple solutions in our head, like, oh, if I just got this job, then, you know, cut to me having no problems, like this one, you know, financial problem is solved. It's like, okay, that one problem will be solved, but then it could unlock like five other problems that you never thought of, or put you in a realm where it's so unfamiliar to you that you can't even recognize the problems, you know? So it is a strange thing to say, you know, cause you know, no one's going to feel bad for someone who's like, has had success. That's not what I'm saying. I just mean like, the things that you think are going to solve your life don't necessarily solve everything. And in a lot of cases, they can bring more stress and pressure and responsibility than you might have. You never see all of that stuff.
You really you don't. See yeah.
The
you
one
don't.
Dimension of like, you know, like,
we
oh,
struggle.
Yeah.
We struggle with the, I'm so glad you opened the conversation by acknowledging the fact that yes, David, a lifelong nerd, collector of comics and movie geek, is all of a sudden, you know, he's working in these amazing projects that are all his dreams come true. He's getting to do these things. And you said it right at the beginning, but you're still a human being. And you still got that with the complexity of all of that comes all these other elements that make that add to that. And I think, you know, the work we do on ourselves is so pivotal to all the other stuff. And whether it's work or relationship, I'm sure you found this yourself because you have this, you know, beautiful, you know, marriage and love that is, that is, you can see from, you know, 1,000 miles away is glowing. And I feel like I knew I was really ready when I wasn't looking for anybody else any partner or any job or any validation to fulfill or complete some hole in me that I wasn't able to suss out and do the work on myself. When I had been looking to other people in the past to help fix those things in me, or when I thought that my role in other people's lives was to fix or fill the things that they needed, it was always kind of a fool's errand. And it's really great being in partnership with, you know, with someone that's not the root of the need of the relationship. Does that make sense?
It does. I think the idea of it as a partnership is a really great way to phrase it, because you are working together, and you know, it's helpful when in relationships you have common goals and you understand each other, and you know, I also think that, you know, listen, because of the nature of our culture and what we tend to prioritize, you know, there's so many, you know, like quote productivity or quote self-help books that are like, here's how you get successful. Here's how you get all the things you want. You want a boat. Here's a fucking boat, you know, but there are very few things I feel like it tends to stop there. It's like, I don't see a lot of stuff that says, well, here's how to be successful, not how to get success. Here's how to be, and again, not materially successful, although that's fine, but here's how to be and maintain it. And so it's almost like our culture is kind of like, here, you got this material thing you wanted, now fuck off, now it's your problem. And it's like, well, how do you maintain, because it doesn't stop there, you know, like especially the mental health journey, it doesn't stop there. And how do you not let it take over your life or become your identity? Or how do you have balance with it? And how do you see it in a healthy way? You know, like these are a lot of questions that I don't think we ask a lot in our culture. And you know, especially to anyone who's going through what you've just said, like, oh my God, I got all these things that I want. I don't feel happy. And I feel guilty that I don't feel happy. It's like, yes, because things don't necessarily make you happy. You have to, you know, you have to be instead of doing to be, if that makes any sense.
It does. And, yeah. And I think you're, you know, excellent example of that, continuing to do the work on yourself and finding your place in the universe and seeing how you can contribute to this world. I think there are, it's easy for people, you know, listening to be like, oh, you know, well, Dave and Chris now have material security. They have this. And that's not true, you guys. Like if you're listening, people who I know who were born with material security and that wasn't even a question to them, have struggled in ways that I couldn't even fathom, or have had pressures upon them that I didn't understand. And there's the complexity of the human mind and all the struggles that we go through really don't have very much to do with that. And I know that's, now you say, well, that's easy for you to say now that you know you've got your whatever. And I go, I want to say, even I had a very deep, very powerful conversation about 2 weeks ago. It was one of these beautiful days where we just talked all day. We had not gotten a chance to do that in so long. And if there's anything that I need you to hear today, it's that we were sitting there holding each other, talking and talking, and we came to the conclusion that we are absolutely as happy right now in 2021 in a nice house that we bought with the success of, you know, things that we've been able to make happen or that have happened to us, as we were in 2014 when our son was being brought home from Cedars-Sinai Hospital, and we had $400 between us in our checking account. We had no idea how we were going to pay the rent the next month. We were under, you know, different kinds of stress at that point, but we were absolutely being successful in that moment. We had worked, we were working on our relationship. We were working on ourselves. We were doing the stuff, you know, necessary to get to that most authentic experience on a day-to-day basis. And I assure you, I mean this from the very, very bottom of my heart. We absolutely were as happy, as content at that moment as we are right now.
Well, that presence of mind, especially if you're, you know, especially if you're doing meditation, you know, that sort of appreciation for the pure presence of the moment, you know, it's a very, especially now, it's an incredibly hard thing to achieve because there are so many things that want to distract you all fucking day long. Our devices and the traffic and the world and the, you know, and there's just so many things that want to pull your attention. And so it's so easy to live outside the present moment, because a lot of times you want to fucking escape the present moment because it's loud, you know, and we're not, I don't think we're, you know, like the noise of the world evolved quite rapidly in the past 100 years, faster than I think our brains could evolve to process and handle all of it. And so, you know, I certainly think, you know, that must be a contributing factor in, you know, the sort of the rise and the struggles of mental health that we see, because I think we're just so overloaded all the time. And so to be able to step out and just kind of like shove it all away and just be present with ourselves is, you know, it's can be very challenging, but it's rewarding as fuck if you can do it.
It is. And when you're like us, you know, I love our shows, love our movies, love our music, for me, I mean, there's so many comics I can't even keep up. It seems like, and I just am just swimming through all the things that I geek out and nerd out over. And I just, there is so much stimulation. My God, we were just sitting down last night to just click through and be like, okay, what do we need to catch up on? And the list was so daunting. Oh,
yeah. yeah. I'm quite aware of that. I'm quite aware of that list. I mean, we probably eat dinner and then we crawl into bed every night at like 7 and we just kind of watch stuff, you know, because Lydia's, about 6 months pregnant now. So we are, you know, so we're kind of, we're resting in the evenings and watching stuff. And even that, I just sort of feel like, I don't know how we're going to, there's just so much, there's just too much of the stuff. There's just too much stuff. And so we just kind of like, you know, chip through it a little bit at a time and just kind of enjoy it while we can. But we are really in a golden age of content.
Yes, and in 3 months, you will not be having that luxury. So enjoy it right now, my friend. And
I think the baby's really going to enjoy watching the season 2 of Lock and Key. I really think that's what the baby wants to see. The baby really wants to see a magical house with demon keys.
Baby wants the boys. Baby wants Lock and Key. Baby wants, yes, Midnight Mass. What? How are you feeling?
Great. We're feeling great. You know, like we're just feeling very grateful that, you know, it's so far everything's been going very well. And
can I give you one piece of advice that I always
give?
Give
me lots of pieces of advice.
Well, here's the only advice I like to give. So she's doing all the hard work. She has all the heavy lifting. She's the one that has to, absolutely suffer. It's totally unfair the way that the reproduction process treats the female body as opposed to the male body. So when you get home and feeding, depending on, you know, however you guys will be feeding the baby, it happens so regularly. It's like every 2 hours. And then after you feed the baby, you change the diaper and then put the baby back down. So the baby has this weird sleeping cycle in the beginning where it's like just a couple of hours sleep, and then it wakes up and it's hungry and it wants attention, and then it goes back to sleep. So it isn't that like what we're used to, where we sleep for 8 or 9 hours and then, you know, are up for the other part of the day. So when Eve first got home, something that with Arlo, and then I repeated this with Penny, something that worked really well for us was, especially at nighttime, but those first couple of days and then going into nighttime, she would lay in bed and we had the bassinet close enough that when the baby would wake up, I just put it on myself. I'll always be the one that wakes up when the baby wakes up. I go get the baby, bring it to her so she could either feed by breastfeeding or with a bottle. And then it was my job to burp the baby, change the diaper, put the baby back down. That's my advice to you in that beginning part, because there's so much strain on her. You are absolutely responsible for like getting the baby, bringing it to her, feeding so that she doesn't have to get up. She doesn't have to move.
That's amazing advice. I love that advice. And also I completely agree with you. I remember when Lydia found out she was pregnant, she said, "We're pregnant." And I think one of my first thoughts was like, "Hey, that is a really generous co-producer credit. I really appreciate that. I feel like it's the EP credit that someone gets because their agent helped, you know, recommend an actor, not because they really had the, you know, were really doing the hands-on production."
Perfect analogy. Like, yeah, you showed up at the premiere and your name is on the screen.
And you know, it was like a contractual EP credit. But I was really appreciated that, you know, it's like, "Hey, listen, if you just said I'm pregnant, you're very generous with saying the we." And like another friend of mine referred to this, like, "That's the royalist of we's. That is a very generous, like, you know, we are pregnant. Oh, well, I'm here." And so my role is like, "Whatever you need, you know, like, I'm just whatever we're doing, whatever I can do, whatever you need, that's what I'm going to, you know, just to like support structure." So that is very excellent advice. And, you know, and I haven't, as someone who's normally kind of a relatively anxious person, I've not, knock wood, I've not really had anxiety about it.
That's great.
Been feeling really good and excited about it. And I have these dreams where I'm hanging out with my kid and everything just feels really nice. I don't know.
That's great, man. Don't question that. That's, you know, that's, the kid is already communicating with you from where they are. You already have developed this bond with them. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. We're very goal-based people in life, and I'm intensely goal-based. I mean, if we were in my office right now, I'd show you. I have, you know, my goals are always a thing for me. And it was tricky for us when we found out that we were going to be parents, because it wasn't part of necessarily our plan, but it became part of our lives. And our kids are not the center of our universe, but they are definitely two of the brightest stars in our sky. And they are these incredible gifts to our lives. And as we set the goal for what do we want as parents? Like, what is it that we are setting out to achieve? So our goal, and hopefully we will achieve this, is to help Arlo and Penny be kind and independent. Those are our two tenets that we always come back to when we're trying to make a decision about anything. Like, does it get us closer to the goal? Kindness, independence. Happy. I always hated that my parents was, "Well, I just want to raise happy kids. I just want happy children." I was like, "Well, that's not very fair. Life is only happy if you're doing great, like 60% of the time. Let's not put that pressure on
us." Happiness is also an interesting concept, because sometimes I think we look at happiness. I know I've said this on the podcast before, but we sort of chase happiness like it's some kind of fucking drug. You know, it's like, I'm just gonna take the happy. And it's like, and there's a lot of pressure, like, well, what does even that mean? And I think as I've gotten older, what I think we mean, or at least what I think I want to achieve, is just peace, like a grounded contentment and peace, you know. Absolutely. Like that happiness is not some, you know, like, "Oh, I'm so happy," you know, like it's not this like super intense, you know, like, I don't know, some kind of drug you could probably get on Black Mirror episode, but it's like, I think it's sort of like the absence of anxiety and the absence of pain, the absence of negative things. It's just this general good sense of well-being. And I think sort of relocating it to that and seeing it that way has been very helpful, because then you're not like, "I don't feel intense joy," you know, like, well, no, because no one feels like no one's joy is on 11 all the time, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And it's like, life's a mix, like you said earlier. So, you know, I think it's just sort of that kind of grounded, that sort of feeling okay is, as I think is a good And that's why I talk about I've talked about the trainer before, where it's like when I first started working out, I would want to feel something, like I was doing something. Oh, I feel sore. I feel like I really did something. And now it's like I feel like I actively work out, so I don't feel any, like I don't feel sore. I don't feel stiff. I don't feel, I'm not feeling, I'm sort of working out to just kind of have like a a muscular piece and flexibility, I suppose.
Baseline, it's so important for everybody listening. If you're struggling with just, you know, your general malaise and anxiety and depression, getting up and doing 10 minutes of yoga and even 20 minutes of some form of cardio or core workout daily is night and day.
When walking around your block, walking around your block and just breathing in.
Changing your blood, your heart rate, changing the way your oxygen's hitting your brain. Every time Eve and I are about to, we feel an argument coming in, we feel like we're starting to get into an untiable knot or unknottable knot. It's like, okay, let's go 5 minutes, change our heart rate, get some oxygen flowing differently. And then we can like talk.
Well, yeah. And it's like, obviously some, you know, we do feel things that are emotional, like the causes are emotional in nature, but then other times we feel that there might be emotional causes, but it's like, I know that if I start to feel anxious or sad or something, literally I'll drink water and then I'll feel better and go, oh, I think I was just dehydrated. You know, it's like, how many physiological reasons can we chip away at to just stack the decks in our favor? You know, it's like, oh, I haven't eaten for like 5 hours. So I need to eat a little something. You know, it's like, oh, now I feel better. Oh, fuck. Again, like, because it's so easy to get tricked into thinking that everything is some like grand emotion.
Has mental some grand thing. Emotional.
And like, oh, I was just a little hungry.
Yeah.
realize it.
When you start to slip off your baseline in a way that you're feeling like, this is something's off. It must be because of I'm stressed about this thing or because I'm arguing with my partner about this. Always do. I learned this a long time ago. Halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Check that list first before you get into psychoanalyzing yourself. Are you hungry? Are you, you know, angry? Are you lonely? Are you tired? And it's for me, a lot of times it's hungry. It's crazy how much I've like, oh shit, it's 4 o'clock. And I had cereal and a poached egg at 9. No wonder I feel depressed.
And I think another big one too, just sort of tacking on to that as a little addendum, is try not to tackle big existential life questions when you're feeling any one of those things, especially if you're hungry or tired, especially because it's so easy to get anxious late at night or in the middle of the night. Like I wake up always, I have like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning for a little bit. Couple hours, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, your brain's going to want you to process some of that stuff. But if you're sick or if you're tired or if you're hungry, and you start to go, I don't know what my life means. I don't just go stop. Go now. I may not be operating at 100% to really kind of tackle some of this. So it's okay to shelve this until I'm feeling better. Because then when you're feeling better, you're like, oh yeah, I kind of just invented this thing in my head that wasn't there. Or at least you'd have more of the tool set to like be able to really kind of process it and deal with it and pick a next step, an action item or something. So that would be my small addendum to the end of that. Don't tackle big life problems if you're feeling any one of those.
Such good advice. And always have a comic book on hand that you can read when you need to de-stress.
Oh, by the way, I do, you know, we sort of over the podcast talking about like Dune and how well it's being received and stuff. And that is no small feat. You know, it's like the sort of the, because I remember when the first Dune came out, I'm old enough. I saw it when it came out. And I remember I was old enough to see it, but young enough to be confused by it, because I think what I was expecting in the original Dune was this kind of like Star Wars-esque fairy tale. And it was a much more complicated story than that. And so, you know, the heft of making that story, especially knowing that a previous one exists, you know, is a really big deal. It's a very big feat to overcome.
Yeah, I'm so proud to be a part of it. I have a small role in the film, and just getting to be, you know, amongst that Denis vision. You know, he took such a massive swing. You know, Dune, a film that's already been made based on, you know, one of the greatest, you know, science fiction pieces of literature ever written, but also one of the most densely and complicated, you know, books when it comes to, you know, sci-fi space operas. And that he took such a massive swing and has created something that people can really just go and enjoy, whether they don't even have never heard the word Dune before or not. Like it's just, it's so exciting. I think I feel the same, you know, with just because it just recently came out and now it's going to Blu-ray with James, like getting to make the Suicide Squad, like that's an already existing material, you know, property that people may have a familiarity with what they think it is. And then James just takes this massive swing as an artist and makes his own bold choices. And I'm in this moment of deep bubbling, cackling, crackling gratitude, man, where artists, you know, in the top of their game seem to think that I could be, it's hard. It's weird to even talk, like say it out loud. It's emotionally overwhelming to think about the fact that they're like, that they think I could be a benefit to something that they're attempting to achieve. It's so humbling. And to know that, you know, 20 years ago, I wanted nothing more than to not exist and to be dead and to be here now, getting to talk to you, someone who I've watched for years, have been a fan of for years, and getting to talk about, you know, all these important things. It's such a gift. I'm so grateful. Gratitude, as you know, from the journey of being sober people, like gratitude is such a foundational, like bolt in the machinery of how we can live our best lives. But like, boy, am I feeling it right now.
But it's also just from doing a bunch of the internal work. You know, it's like you're talking about James and Denis and you and you're saying taking big swings, but it's like, but all these folks knew who they had a strong sense of who they were and what they wanted and made choices based on that accordingly. But you did the same thing. You've done the same thing, you know, like turning down a job, turning down guaranteed money because it didn't align with what you felt you wanted, like what you felt you could do or was in line with what you were trying to do because you had a strong sense of who you were because you did all this internal work. Like that's the exact same basic structure of what you're talking about, you know? And so it just takes the looking inward, and that can be really scary. It's not an easy thing to do. And, you know, it's like having to confront, you know, working on stuff or confronting things you don't want to talk about, you know, whatever. It just, but you did it. And, you know, and so when it's, so for anyone saying like, oh man, that Dos Machin, he's so lucky. It's like, well, but he made choices, you know, it's like, yes, there's some luck, but it's like that sort of like opportunity meeting preparation, you know, and like, yes, like doing all of the, and having a strong sense of, you know, all the things that I've, all the jobs that I've ever done that I feel like I, at least meant the most to me or had the most impact were things where I was able to like really put something of myself, just like you said, James does with his movies, or like you do with stuff, your roles. And, you know, it's like you really scoop something real into that. And that's what kind of makes it stick, you know, I think. And that's not why you should do it, but that's a nice side effect. Like that's a nice side effect of it. You know, in as much as it allows you, you need to do the kind of work that you want to do. I mean, do you have kind of a plan at this point, or like a general, I mean, I know like making plans is sort of it can be a little bit of a folly sometimes because like, we can't control anything, but
I have less, I mean, the plan is to continue to, you know, surround myself with the people that love and support me and that I can love and support, and to, you know, just do as much possible with the opportunities that I've been presented with while, you know, being as loving and supportive as a partner, parent, and collaborator as I can. And then professionally, I am big about goals. So it's, I do, the plan is in the goal setting. And I do believe in setting calendar date goals, because you don't live and die by them though. So like I set a goal that by 2020, I would be into production on the next film that I wrote. Well, we're not going to be in production, but we will be into production by spring of 2021. But by having that goal and looking at it every day on my board of going, Hide Your Eyes, which is a film that I wrote that is a psychological horror film that deals with addiction and mental unwellness. That film, it will be, we're going to be shooting it in the spring. I have, you know, professional goals. There's stories that I really want to tell, including I'm gratefully getting to expand upon the world of Count Crowley. And I have big dreams for the other media in which that story could unfold. And we're working on that now. I have several scripts that I've been working passionately on for quite a while, some by myself and some with collaborators. And so those are in exciting stages of development, all of which include roles for myself, because as an actor, I always love when I can write and tell a story and create an opportunity for myself as an artist to flex muscles that maybe I wouldn't otherwise get to do. And then as an actor, I'm really, in my lifetime, when I moved to LA, my three biggest acting career goals were, number one, to work with David Lynch, number two, to work with the Muppets, and number three, to play a James Bond villain. And I worked with, I did everything within my power and finally got the chance to be a part of David Lynch's vision by being in his return to Twin Peaks, which was a dream come true. And then the Muppets, I don't know how that's going to happen, but I'm just going to keep working towards that goal. And the Bond villain of it all, I'm just going to keep working towards that goal by hopefully just continuing to create characters that hopefully capture the interest or attention of maybe some filmmaker who someday will be like, ah, that's the guy that's going to be, you know, with the eye patch and the hairless cat.
You're putting it out there in the universe. And by the way, I also think that it's great that you said, I don't live and die by the goal date, because, you know, the goals themselves, you know, like goals are great, but I think it's not always for the reasons that people may automatically think. Like the achievement of a goal happens in an instant. Like once the goal is actually achieved, like it's a tipping point and then the box is checked. And a lot of times you can be like, oh, well, I achieved that goal. Now what? You know, it's like it's really the process of what do you become in the pursuit of that goal? It's the journey, you know, what do you see along the way? You know, it's like you could say, hey, we're going to drive to whatever, Nebraska. And Nebraska, when you get to Nebraska, it might be amazing. But you probably got to see all these amazing things along the way that you never would have seen if you hadn't driven to.
That's exactly it, man. When I got to LA 2010, I didn't have any agent, no manager. I would wake up every day and I would look at my goals and I would work my way towards them by submitting myself, going and helping on music videos, short films, trying to just keep just every step towards those goals. And I didn't hit the David Lynch goal until 2016. So for 6 years, I was driving towards those goals while at the same time, all these other incredible parts of the journey. Your analogy is perfect because it's a journey. It's not a destination. I worked so hard to get Animals made. When it finally happened, the experience of making that film, the process was so incredible that the night I stood for the first time with an audience in New York, in Austin, actually, at South by Southwest, I stood with Eve. She was 8 months pregnant. The movie played at the big theater in Austin. And then we stood outside and the crowd was gone. And like the little, you know, paper advertisements were blowing down the street like a scene out of some Capra movie. And we're just going, it's over. That was it. That was it. So the journey, the process, the production, that's what lives in my bones and my flesh and my blood. And I have that forever, you know?
Yeah. And also, you know, I think it's good for, you know, I think it's good for people who are trying to, you know, I think we're always all trying to figure it out, but, you know, sit down and saying like, you know, right now, who am I? What do I want? And then when you kind of write those things down, I think it's important to say like, how many of those things that I want are external things? And how, like, is it all external things? Well, I want this and I want this thing and I want that thing and I want that thing. Like kind of looking and creating a balance of like, how many of those are internal things? Like, well, like peace and well-being and health, you know, mental health, physical health, you know, and I think it's important to mix those in because you really do have to, I think it is really important to give those the care that you would give, you know, trying to make $1 million or whatever it is, which is ultimately going to solve some of your problems, but not fix you.
Yep.
So, you know, like what can you do to make sure that you are learning more about who you are so that you can better answer the question of what do I want? And that those answers can change. It's okay if they evolve.
Absolutely.
You're not a failure if you go, you know what? I really thought I wanted this thing, but I've grown or I've evolved. Or now that I see what's involved, I just don't want all the stuff that surrounds it. And it's okay to say like, I'm going to try something else. I got all this experience in this one direction and that was worth it. You know, like, again, my friend and trainer always says like, everyone, you know, like people are in our lives for a reason, a season or a lifetime. And I think their experiences kind of have the same thing. Was this experience just this seasonal thing? Was it just a quick one-time thing? Or was this like a lifelong journey? And it's okay for those to change.
I love that. I'm stealing that, man. That is so brilliant. It's so true. And
it's
there are
public
people,
domain.
There's people I've had an afternoon with, and it's changed my life. There are people that I see every week and they change my life. And there are people that I will spend the rest of my life with and they change my life. And all of those have an important role to play. And it's just up to us to be open, willing, ready, and you know, always open to the possibility, the potential of what is just, you know, when we get off of this call, like what's outside that door for me? What's outside that door for you? You've got so many amazing, huge, exciting things happening in your life. And I feel like I do as well. And everybody who's listening, you may not feel that way about yourself right now, but the truth is you do. The potential every day you wake up is that it could be an entirely new existence. And we have so much power in that. And we're strongest when we, again, keep harping on this, surround ourselves with people who authentically support and love and believe in us.
Well, outside any huge external thing that's happening, I think the biggest thing that any of us can hope for, get to have, or can should accept is just waking up and going, I feel good with me. I feel like I'm enough. Regardless of whatever happens outside that door for you, it's a lot of saws and bookcases being made. but
oh man, and a parent-teacher conference, and then you know, Halloween costume supplies, and let's see, what's for dinner? I got to make dinner tonight. Oh my god!
Well, I you know, it's as many times as I've seen you at things or seen you at events or parties, and we've. You know, we've caught up or we've gotten to chit chat or whatever. I love that we've actually just gotten to have this really focused, wonderful conversation. This definitely falls into the category of like, of conversations that will continue to resonate. I'm just so glad. I'm so appreciative that we had the opportunity to have it.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. I mean, for everybody listening, you should know, like Chris and I mean, I knew and was a fan of Chris before meeting him, but we met, you know, you and I met at like a party at James Gunn's or we'd be at these big movie premieres together. And we'd have these really, you're right, compressed, concise conversations where we got to know one another in these intense environments that were so cool. But at the same time, like the fact that like, now we get to have this like really in-depth life combo is like, it just makes me so happy and I'm excited to have many more. Well, you're such an awesome guy, man. You're such an awesome guy. And I love that you use your platform for so much positivity in the world. And you really, it's really wonderful.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate your advocacy for mental health and for balance and for, you know, like, and for recovery and all the good things. I know it helps people. I know when you mention it, every time you mention it, it helps someone. And I think that's really, that's great. And that's important. And you should feel happy about that. You know, like it's those moments, those times in life where someone just came along and said, today's the day. And you're like, fuck, I think today's the day, you know? and it gets to be. So congratulations on everything. And I'm really just happy for you. And please tell Eve I said hi. And hopefully we'll get to see you like in the world.
Yes. Yes. We'll have a play date before you know it. I can't wait. We'll get the families together. It'll be awesome.
I appreciate that, man. It's so good to see you. I appreciate you and congratulations. And I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, dude. Thank you.
All right. The end.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.